Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
Simon Coveney, Minister for Foreign Affairs and Defence, is in London this morning for meetings with three British cabinet ministers. Brexit, the Security Council and recent unrest and rioting in loyalist areas of Belfast are all on the agenda. And Minister Coveney joins me on the line now. Good morning to you, Minister. Thank you for joining us. We'll discuss your trip in more detail in a moment. But first, the good news yesterday that there'll be over 500,000 doses of the Pfizer vaccine made available to Ireland. That's likely to keep Ireland on track to hit the June target of administering one dose to 80% of adults, at least to those who want it. But given the bad press this week around AstraZeneca, are you confident that the over 60s, those between 60 and 69, will be happy to take the jab?
I certainly hope so. I think NIAC in Ireland, who are there to advise us on these things, have taken a very cautious approach, and I think they're right to. And so they are recommending that we limit the AstraZeneca vaccine to people over the age of 60. And I think it's safe to do that. And I think the data is there to back that up. So I certainly hope that people will enthusiastically register, and they can start registering today for the vaccine. And we know it works. We know it's very, very effective. We know it protects people. And so the more people that get vaccinated, the safer the country becomes and individuals become. And, you know, we're making real progress now. We have over 1 million doses of the vaccine already applied, and we're continuing to accelerate. And even though there will be bumps along the way and we'll have unexpected reasons to recalibrate and change the timelines
as we had this week
with AstraZeneca, with Janssen, and of course the positive news from Pfizer yesterday.
But is there a contingency plan in place if people between the ages of 60 and 69 decide they don't want to take AstraZeneca?
Well, look, I mean, you know, nobody can force anybody to take anything, but the strong advice is that AstraZeneca is safe, as indeed are the other vaccines that have been approved from Pfizer and from Moderna. And certainly I hope we'll see the benefits of Janssen as well soon. And I think that Irish people have responded very positively to that. There's a very high percentage of people wanting to be vaccinated as soon as possible. And I think we need to continue to encourage that rather than put doubts in people's minds that aren't backed up by science or data.
Well, on that, we had a lot of people getting in touch with the programme yesterday under the age of 60 who said they'd gladly take AstraZeneca. Do you think they
Absolutely.
Should be offered a choice?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, if you listen to Ronan Glynn on this, I think he's been very good. But he talks about the decision by NIAC and the abundance of caution that is driving that decision. And I think that's true. And so, you know, I think that certainly the benefits far outweigh the risks for all age groups with AstraZeneca. But we are taking a cautious approach. There are other vaccines available, too, in terms of the vaccine rollout plans. And that's why I think we have to follow the NIAC advice. They are the experts. We're politicians that have to then put policy around implementing public health advice. And that's what we're doing.
But I think the message has to be very clear.
I mean, you know, lots of people are listening to this show. I think the message needs to be very clear. You know, AstraZeneca is safe, and it's particularly safe for people over the age of 60 in the context of the threats that are faced from COVID. And, you know, people should trust the system because the decisions are being made by public health experts, not by politicians when it comes to who gets what vaccine and when.
So if someone refuses the AstraZeneca vaccine, they can change their mind, can't they, and decide that they would like to be vaccinated. So they could refuse that jab until they're offered Pfizer or whichever one they want. So ultimately they will get a choice.
Well, I mean, that's possible. But if you decide not to take up the vaccine that's offered to you when it's offered, well, then you're essentially putting yourself to the back of the queue until everybody else gets vaccinated, which will certainly take quite some time. So the safest thing to do.
The government is telling us that it won't take long at all. You know, you could refuse one this week, but you might have it by the end of June.
No, what we're saying is that 4 out of 5 people will have their first dose by the end of June. That's the estimate, and I think we're confident that can be achieved. But don't forget, that is just the first dose. People then have to get their second dose. And of course, there'll be people who'll still be getting their first dose into July. So, you know, the safest thing to do by far is to ensure that when you are offered a vaccine on the back of public health advice from experts, that you say yes to that. Mm-hmm. You take that protection, you register. And we're doing it on the basis of risk. So the people who are most at risk of being seriously sick from COVID are the people who are getting vaccinated first.
Would it be a good idea, in your view,
to work with the state, with the public health advice on that, and the more people at risk that we can get vaccinated, then the easier it is for the government to make decisions to ease restrictions and all of the other benefits that flow from that.
Would it be a good idea if you had people in their 30s, 40s and 50s who wanted to take AstraZeneca, allow those people to sign a waiver to say they understand the tiny risk that exists there and allow them to have AstraZeneca?
No, because we've always made the point that we're going to rely on public health advice to determine what vaccines are administered to who and when. And we have a team of people who are working night and day to try to make sure that the government has the most accurate advice based on international best practice, based on all of the data that's there, both nationally and internationally, to make sure that this is done safely. So if we allow a situation where people are picking and choosing what vaccine they want and when they want to make themselves available for it and willing to sign waivers and so on, we're not going to get vaccine rollout at the pace that we need it to be rolled out at. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why we've simplified the rollout system to link it to age, because age determines risk in terms of whether or not this virus could potentially kill you or not, or make you very, very sick. And so that is why we're asking people to work with the public health expertise that we have advising government and to make sure that we roll out, using all the vaccines that are available to us and approved, the vaccine rollout plan as quickly as we possibly can. And, you know, I think we're going to see by the end of June, we're going to see somewhere between 3.5 million and 4.5 million vaccine doses in people's arms. If it's at the higher range of that figure, then we'll be beyond 80% of adults who want to be vaccinated having their first vaccine dose. And, you know, if we do this efficiently and work with the system, that is our best chance, in my view, of ensuring that society as a whole is as safe as it possibly can be, benefiting from rapid vaccine rollout, which is what we're going to see between now and the end of June.
There's a strong suspicion that you do not buy into mandatory hotel quarantine. Is that the case?
No. And, you know, like there's been quite a bit written about that. I mean, you know, my obligation in government and my legal obligation under the legislation linked to mandatory hotel quarantine is that I'm part of the consultation process with Stephen Donnelly to make sure that we try to get this right. And I have, I think, done what I'm supposed to do, which is to ask the hard questions, to pose different scenarios that are difficult to manage. Mandatory hotel quarantine is not easy to implement. That's why no other country in the European Union is doing it. The UK are doing it, but not to the same extent that we are. You know, they're not adding EU countries to their mandatory hotel quarantine list. They're not adding the US or Canada either. Now, they may in the future, but they're not at the moment. So we are and have taken a very cautious approach to international travel. We can see that in the data in terms of the numbers of people that have been traveling. I believe that mandatory hotel quarantine is the right thing to do. But I think we've also got to try to ensure that the government is open to adapting and changing the system to respond to the challenges that are there. And, you know, people compare Ireland to New Zealand. Just give me 1 second on this, because I think it's important to set the context here. People talk about New Zealand and the success of New Zealand in terms of mandatory hotel quarantine. We have spoken to New Zealand authorities at length in relation to learning the lessons that they have learned and the mistakes that they've made and the successes that they've had over the last 12 months. But Ireland is a very different country to New Zealand. You know, we share a landmass with the United Kingdom in the context of Northern Ireland. We don't control international travel coming into Northern Ireland. We're part of an EU single market with 26 other countries. We have to make sure that our mandatory hotel quarantine system is legally sound, We have legal challenges every day from people who are in the system. We have to make sure that it's proportionate in the context of making sure that people who do represent a risk are the people who are in mandatory hotel quarantine. So and we have to make sure that it's implementable.
But given that you say that then, is there any point, in your view, in Ireland doing mandatory hotel quarantine at all?
No, there is. You know, and I think primarily this is about trying to keep variants of concern out of Ireland and doing everything we can and using all that we control to do that. That means it's going to cause a lot of inconvenience for a lot of people who need to travel. I mean, people who don't need to travel shouldn't be traveling anyway. And I think, you know, we will have to adjust this system along the way. So, for example, we're considering at the moment whether people who are vaccinated should be required to go to mandatory hotel quarantine or not. We know that many countries across the European Union don't require any kind of quarantine now for people who are vaccinated, never mind mandatory hotel quarantine. And so hopefully we'll soon be able to make a decision and an adjustment on that issue. Mm-hmm. We also want to make sure that the appeal system happens early so that if there is a compelling humanitarian reason as to why people shouldn't go into mandatory hotel quarantine, that we can make an early decision on that so that we have a humane approach to this issue, so you don't have really difficult cases emerging. So, you know, none of this stuff is straightforward and easy, but we are determined to do it. We think there is a public health benefit from mandatory hotel quarantine. We think it can protect Ireland, or at least partly protect Ireland, from variants of concern coming into the country, or indeed countries that have very high incidence of COVID, effectively reseeding the problem here in Ireland when people have made such efforts to try to get rid of COVID out of Irish society. So we are going to have mandatory hotel quarantine for a period of time. We're going to have to increase capacity. We currently have 654 rooms. That's going to go to 960 from next Monday and 1,300 or over 1,300 from the following Monday. And that is putting pressure on the system. There's no question about that. And it's up to us to work together as a government. I mean, why is Stephen Donnelly being asked to do all of this on his own?
Yeah, like, even the Minister for Justice seems to be asking that question. It's reported that she said at Cabinet that other departments should be prepared to help him.
Well, I said that actually, but so did Helen McEntee. But, you know, other departments are helping. You know, I mean, I'm the Minister for Defence. We have well over 100 Defence Force personnel involved in managing the hotel quarantine system and supervising it to make sure that it works smoothly. The Department of Justice is also involved in the mandatory hotel quarantine system in terms of Gardaí being available and in terms of managing the appeal system.
So if both the Minister for Justice and yourself are saying he should be helped, who are you saying should help him?
The Department of Transport is also involved in terms of managing operations in airports and ports. So there is a...
So who else should help them? You know, if all those departments are involved, surely they can get it right. You can get it right. Who else should helping?
Sorry, those comments were in the context of bringing forward a memo next week or the week after in terms of amendments and adjustments to improve mandatory hotel quarantine in terms of streamlining the system and so on. And what I said and what Helen McEntee supported was that our departments should be involved in ensuring that we are doing everything we can to support the Department of Health to produce the memos that are necessary for government to make decisions. But just, you know, this idea that the Department of Health and Stephen Donnelly has to do all of this on his own is just, you know, I mean, yes, he has the primary department in terms of responsibility for mandatory hotel quarantine, and that is appropriate because this is a public health measure, and so the Department of Health is leading on it. But there are other departments and other arms of the state, i.e. the Garda Síochána and the Defence Forces, that are very much there to support the Department of Health to make sure that this operates as well as it possibly can. Okay. We are going to have difficulties and hiccups along the way.
Well, look, we've seen those this week, and your brother, who is a significant figure in business as boss of Greencore, says it's hard to overstate the incompetence and lack of foresight regarding the capacity issues. And he also branded mandatory hotel quarantine, likening it to a prison.
Yeah, and look, I've got five brothers and a sister, and they're all independent, thinking, vocal people, let me tell you.
And they're also very smart. And I would find it really strange if he didn't consult you before he tweeted that, did he?
No, he didn't. I spoke to him after he tweeted it, but he
What did you say to him?
No, look, I'm not going to go into my conversations with my brother. You know, I mean, anyone.
Did you feel that criticism was aimed at you, though?
Look, anybody in a democracy has a right to outline a view. And, you know, I'm close to all of my brothers, I'm glad to say, and my sister, but they all have their own independent views and frustrations, and sometimes they vocalize them. And, you know, I think you know what it's like to come from a big family. Mm-hmm. And I'm certainly not going to be my brother's keeper on this one.
Do you agree with him?
No, I don't. You know, I mean, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing in government if I did. Mandatory hotel quarantine is necessary. I think it adds to the shield that we're trying to put in place to protect Irish people from COVID. But it's not perfect. We are going to make mistakes. There is a reason why other EU countries are not going down the mandatory hotel quarantine policy, because it's very difficult to implement. And we're seeing that at the moment. But we will improve it as we go. And I think we will get a benefit from it in terms of reducing the likelihood of bringing new variants of concern into Ireland. And that is the purpose of mandatory hotel quarantine.
And if that is the purpose, then that is still going to exist once everybody is vaccinated. So what's the exit strategy?
Well, I mean, once everybody is vaccinated, there's an entirely different level of protection then. You know, and one of the things that we discussed in government yesterday and we're getting public health advice on now is whether or not people who are vaccinated represent a risk in terms of international travel. And we know that the European Union is also developing what's called a green passport system, which President von der Leyen was speaking about again today, where, you know, she is now saying that she hopes that by June there could be a green passport system which effectively allows fully vaccinated and protected people to travel internationally safely. So I think that is our exit strategy. Mm-hmm. And that is why I think mandatory hotel quarantine is temporary, but necessary. I think it will continue on for some third countries in particular outside of the European Union in the context of countries that don't have a lot of vaccination available to them. But I would certainly be hopeful that for EU countries and for countries like Canada and the US, where there is a very proactive rollout of vaccines, that vaccines will provide the reassurance to move away from a hotel quarantine model in the not too distant future.
By the end of June?
No, I'm not saying by the end of June. Let's wait.
Well,
if we
hit 80%, would you be happy enough that that would be a soft target to end mandatory quarantine for most arrivals?
But I mean, mandatory quarantine is about the risk posed by somebody coming into Ireland. Irish population.
But even on that, I mean, when you talk about that and, you know, people who are vaccinated shouldn't have to quarantine, perhaps that's something we'd look at. If we look at AstraZeneca, it's only 10% effective against the South African variant.
Yeah, and so we have to measure risk here. But you've also got to ask yourself the question, you know, does somebody coming from France who's been fully vaccinated and who's tested negative in a PCR test pose a risk that merits going into mandatory hotel quarantine for 12 days versus somebody coming from another country that may not be on the Category 2 list but who isn't vaccinated? You know, and these are valid questions. You know, that is why at the moment, you know, if you look at European countries, Croatia, Greece, Cyprus, Malta, Portugal, Poland, Estonia, Romania, Iceland, all of these countries don't require any form of quarantine at all for people who are vaccinated right now. Never mind mandatory hotel quarantine. So this is about looking at international data and making sure that we get the reassurance necessary to be able to hopefully confirm sooner rather than later that people who are fully vaccinated shouldn't have to go to mandatory hotel quarantine. Whether they have to quarantine at home or in some other way is a matter for public health advice.
All right, let's look at what you're doing today. You're meeting Brandon Lewis, Britain's Northern Secretary, along with the Cabinet Office Minister David Frost and also the Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab. And this is the first time any government minister has been in London for talks in a year. And there used to be three or four ministers there every month. How would you describe the relationship between Britain and Ireland right now?
Well, first of all, can I say, Claire, it's really good to be in London. I haven't been here for formal public meetings for quite some time because of COVID. And you are right, of course, you know, in normal times, Irish ministers come to London. They're back and forth every second month, particularly a foreign minister. And so, you know, one of my focuses today is to try to get back to a relationship where we are regularly meeting and talking, particularly when there are so many issues that Ireland and the UK need to work together on, particularly in relation to Northern Ireland. But I mean, I'm here to meet the Foreign Secretary, Dominic Raab, primarily actually to talk about the UN and the UN Security Council and a whole series of issues that Ireland can work with the UK on. But I'm also here to meet Brandon Lewis, who's the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland. For obvious reasons, there is real tension in Northern Ireland at the moment that has spilt over into violence and rioting in recent weeks. And we need to work together to try to manage that and to ensure that the two governments are not only working together, but seem to be working together with parties in Northern Ireland to try to manage the stresses and strains and polarisation in Northern Irish politics right now, linked to a whole series of things, from policing to the protocol to COVID and so on. And then, of course, I'm also here to meet David Frost, who is the key British government minister and negotiator on Brexit and on the protocol. He travels to Brussels later on this evening to meet Maroš Šefčovič, who is the key EU negotiator and the vice president of the Commission. And of course, we need to talk seriously about how the protocol is being managed, how it can be implemented in a way that listens to the concerns that many in Northern Ireland have, and what flexibilities are possible in the context of protocol implementation into the future. And we've now isolated 27 different outstanding issues in relation to the implementation of the protocol. Many of them have technical solutions and answers. Some of them are more political and are more challenging. And we're going to go through that in some detail today.
Minister, thank you very much for joining us. Minister Simon Coveney.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.